Let's start with something from the beginning of the Sedra. My Rosh Yeshiva Rav Gifter Zatzal asked, a person does chesed because people need chesed done for them. But what is portrayed in the beginning of the Sedra seems very much not understandable. Avraham Avinu was sick, and because of that, the Rabbanu Shel Olam makes it very hot, so he shouldn't be bothered by any guests coming. People are outside, not outside, right? It's a sharav, and people don't stay in their house. And Avraham Avinu can't take it. He's sitting there waiting, look, to see if somebody's coming or whatever. So the Rabbanu Shel Olam sends him malachim, right? It sounds like Avraham Avinu has some kind of problem, right? That he is, what's the word I'm looking for? Something like that, a compulsion, right? Compulsion for, there's nobody around, what are you? So we see from there, he said, that chesed is not necessarily to take care of the needs of the recipient, but it's more to mold the character of the giver. And that's why in Shemone Esrei, we say that the Rebbeinu Shem gave us ahavas chesed. It's not so much doing the chesed. It's the love and desire to do chesed. The difference between a person who does chesed and a person who doesn't do chesed is not so much in the action, but in the attitude. A person who's about chesed, who loves chesed, is a person who is concerned about other people, not necessarily about himself. And he's always looking to do for others. And if he can't do for others, there's something missing by him. Another person is not a Baal Chesed, but when the situation arises, he's willing to help somebody else, he has compassion, that's very nice. But that doesn't show anything about the person himself, it's more about doing and taking care of the needs of others. But it doesn't show anything about the intrinsic character of the person himself. Avraham Avinu wasn't just a person who had compassion, and when there was a need, he took care of the need. But he had the drive to be a person who was constantly involved with others and do for others and not necessarily be involved with himself. And that's a much higher level. Okay. The next thing I want to speak about, we've spoken about in the past in different contexts. I want to put it all together now. Some of you, you'll find this familiar. And there are many new faces here who I'm sure were not here when we spoke about this inyan. And since I consider it an extremely important inyan and one that is to a certain degree neglected today on every level, so I'm going to speak about it again. The Torah is very explicit why Avraham Avinu was chosen to be the progenitor of the nation that would eventually receive the Torah. Then the Torah says clearly in this week's Sedra, Ki yedati, because I know him intimately. Leman asher yitzave esbonav ubnei beiso achrav, because he will command and instruct his children and household after him. Lishmor derech Hashem, to observe the way of God. Lasol tzedako mishpat, to do righteousness and justice. What does that mean? What is special about Avraham Avinu? It's not that he was the biggest Talmud Chacham. It's not that he was the biggest genius. It was because he will teach his children lishmor derech Hashem. The Rambam says in Hilchos Deos that derech Hashem means midos tovos, good character traits. Derech Eretz, good behavior, right? Midos tovos. And because Avraham Avinu would instruct his children, lishmor derech Hashem, to guard, observe the way of God, that's why he was chosen. Because he would instruct his children to have midos tovos, good character. Now, why is that the pivotal factor in being able to be the chosen nation and being the nations can receive the Torah. So the says in Pirkei Avos, "Im ein derech eretz ein Torah." There can't be Torah without derech eretz, and the Rabbeinu Yonah makes it more clear. Lo yishkon haTorah laolam b'misha ein bo midos tovos. The Torah cannot exist forever. Seemingly means it never can exist by someone who doesn't have midos Torah. There can't, Torah can't reside by somebody who doesn't have good character. It never can be. Categorically. There's only one problem with that, and that doesn't seem to be real. Because, unfortunately, there are people who don't have good characters, and the Torah resides by them. So, how could it be? The Rabbeinu Yonah says categorically, Lo yishkon haTorah la'olam. Impossible. By somebody who doesn't have midos tovos, when we see that, seemingly, that there is Torah by people who don't have midos tovos. In order to explain that, I want to explain the following, and then we'll get a little bit deeper into this. What exactly midos tovos are. But on one level, the Reb Simcha Zissel Mikelem said the following. He said that Darwin, Charles Darwin, formulated the theory of evolution, that human beings evolved from apes because he never saw a real human being. So he assumed that animals, refined animals that he saw, came from apes. Had he ever seen a real human being, like my Rebbe, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, he never would have formulated theory. Now, sounds cute, okay, but is it really valid? Did Reb Simcha Zissel think that Charles Darwin was some kind of bum, right, or some kind of Neanderthal guy, you know, swinging from the vines with a turkey leg in his hand, and his friends were all, you know, beer guzzlers who were unrefined people? Then that would make sense, but that's not the case. Charles Darwin was an extremely intelligent, refined person, and his group of friends were also very refined, intellectual people. So how could Reb Simcha Zissel say that Charles Darwin never saw a real human being? I mean, these were not, you know, bums. They were real human beings. What was missing? So I think what he meant is the following, based on the following story. And this story is said about the Rambam, the Maral, and Reb Yonason Apeshitz, which has me believe that it never happened. And it's just a nice story as a marshal. It doesn't have to have happened, not making any difference. But I saw it in writing about the Rambam, so we'll mention about the Rambam. The Rambam had an argument with a philosopher. The philosopher said that you can train an animal to go against its instincts. And the Rambam said you can't. It's impossible. So the philosopher said, I'll prove to you that you can. Give me 10 cats, and I will train them to go against their instincts. So the philosopher took 10 cats, and after a few months, he calls the Rambam, I want you to come to a banquet, and I will prove to you that I've trained these cats to go against their instincts. They come to the banquet, the Rambam comes with a little box, and the philosopher comes with a little box. At the beginning of the meal, the philosopher opens his little box and takes out a bell. He rings the bell. And all of a sudden, out of the kitchen come 10 cats dressed like waiters and waitresses with a towel draped over one arm, balancing a tray with the entree on it in the other arm. They come, serve everybody their entree, curtsy, and go back in the kitchen. The philosopher turns to Rambam. He says, I've trained these cats to go against it. Instinctively, cats walk on all fours. They don't balance themselves on their hind legs. They're not able to serve portions. I've completely made them go against their instincts. The Rambam says, interesting, but it's a long meal. Let's see what happens. No, The philosopher rings his bell again. They serve the main course. Finally, it comes time for dessert. The philosopher takes out his box, takes out his bell, rings his bell. The Rambam, meanwhile, takes out his box, opens it up, and puts it on the floor. And in moments, there's pandemonium in the hall. The trays are being thrown all over, the dish is broken, and the cats are down on all four chasing the mice that the Rambam let loose. The Rambam turns to the philosopher, and he says, you can train a cat to think he's a waiter all you want, but let the first mouse go by, and the cat remembers he's a cat. You can't change the instincts of an animal. The instincts are there, and as soon as the first mouse goes by, the cat remembers who he is. That's a cat. It's not a human being. Human beings are different than cats or any other animal. Human beings also have instincts, drives. But a human being was given seichel, he was given intelligence and given free choice to use that seichel to go against his instincts. A human being can change his instincts. He can change. He can be in total control, unlike an animal. An animal can never be in total control. An animal is the victim of its instincts and drives. But a human being who's given the power to be in total control and totally change or control its instincts and drives under all circumstances. That is a human being. And that's what it says, what's it called? Umosar ho'odam min ha-behema ayin. What is the benefit of a human being over an animal? Ayin, that human beings can say no. An animal can't say no. If it's presented with something that instinctively it wants, food or whatever else it may be, then the animal does it without any cheshbon, doesn't think, doesn't make, well, maybe I'll get a stomach ache if I eat this thing, maybe it's better for me to wait till later, right? Maybe I don't want to become fleshik. Whatever the cheshbonos are, right, an animal doesn't make them. But human beings can. That's the difference between an animal and a human being. Umosar ha'adam min ha-behema, ay. Okay. So, what Reb Simcha Zissel meant is the following. You can have a human being who basically functions like an animal, meaning that he's trained himself to act properly because he realizes that good conduct is a necessary thing because you can't exist in a social atmosphere and environment without good conduct. People will kill each other. So you have to develop good character traits. But there's two levels of character traits. There's a level of character traits that Noah had. Noah, it says, Esho Elokim, Tomim Hoya Bedorosov, Noah was perfect in his generations. Esho Elokim, he walked with God, Elokim, in nature. The Gemara comments that Noah was a tzaddik in the fact that what he did righteous things. He didn't do, unrighteous, wicked things. He was righteous in his actions. Tomim, he was perfect, bidrachav, in his character. But only, what? Bidorosav. But Tomim Hoya, that's character, but only in his generation. Right? Had he been in the generation of Avram, he would have been considered nothing. Maybe nothing, he would have been something. So what it means is like this. Noah's character traits were of the kind that a trained animal could have too. You can train yourself and control yourself temporarily. Okay? Meaning that you've come to the decision that in order to exist in a social environment, people have to act properly, one with the other. And therefore, I train myself to act properly. That's a very fine level. Very fine level. But that's not the level of Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu had the second kind of character traits. Not ones that rose from what is socially acceptable and necessary, but the halachta bidrachav, he emulated God's character traits. He totally transformed himself into a godly person whose character traits emulated God. What's the difference between the two? One very, very striking difference, whether your character traits are a result of feeling the need to act properly, because otherwise people can't get along socially. That's called Esho Elohim, within nature. Elohim is God in nature. He walked with God in nature, and his character was built on that. Then that only applies if you're dealing and interacting with other people. But if you're alone in your house with the shades drawn and nobody else is there, then there is no reason why you can't act like an animal. Because character and good behavior is only based on interaction between people. But if there is no interaction, then intrinsically there's nothing wrong with acting like an animal, as long as you're not hurting anybody. But if the idea of character is to emulate God, then even if you are behind closed doors and it affects nobody, you still have to act like a human being, not like an animal. Because you're a godly person, and godly people are not animals. You're a human being, and a human being means you have certain character. And even if it affects nobody, you have to act in an example, but the first thing in the Shulchan Aruch, right? Does a person have to act modestly? So if the reason for modesty is that if you're living amongst other people, you don't want to do things that will offend them, so you dress modestly, right? You don't go around in a way that affects other people in a negative way. But if you're in the privacy of your house and nobody else is around, there's no reason in the world why you have to be modest. You can walk around any way you want. But the Torah says nothing like that. That even in the privacy of your house, you can't walk around like an animal. You have to be modest. Who does it affect? It affects nobody, but it affects you. You, a human being, is a modest person. That's part of emulating God. And therefore, what's it called? And it's not because, you know, people think that the reason you have to get dressed in the morning modestly, right, is because God is watching. I'll tell you a secret. If God's watching, he can see under the covers too. So what difference does it make to God whether you... But it's not because God is watching, because you have to watch him. You have to emulate him. You have to act in a way that's befitting a human being. And befitting a human being is to act modestly. That's one of the things. So there's a tremendous difference between the standards. The standard of character that Noah had, he was perfect in that standard, was nothing compared to the standard that Avram created. Avram was, it says by Avram in last week's Sedra, his Halech Lefonai, you walk before me, the Heyei Samim, and then you'll be perfect. So what was the difference? Noah walked with God. Avram is supposed to walk in front of God and, what's it called, and observe him. This is what the Sfarno says. Walk in front of me, turn towards me, observe my character, emulate it, and you'll be as perfect as you can be. Noah walked with God in nature. He developed good character because how it interacted with other people. And because of that, he needed constant support. Why? Because basically he was like a trained animal. And let the first mouse go by, you have a problem. He wasn't in total control, he was trained. But he needed constant support from God that he shouldn't be vulnerable to these mice that go by. Mice come in all sizes and shapes for different people. For one person, a mouse is this kind of temptation. For another person, a mouse is a different temptation. But that's mice. Intrinsically, the person basically is no different than an animal. An animal can also be trained. And the person is not in total control. He hasn't developed a character that emulates God where he's in total control. And that's what it says by Avram. After Avram had Bris Mila, until then he was in control of 245 of his limbs, and then God gave him total control of his eyes, his ears. But normally people aren't in control. You can be in total control. That's a human being. So that's first of all what Simcha Zissel meant. Simcha Zissel said that Darwin never saw a real human being. He didn't mean that he saw a bunch of bums. People acted like animals. No. They're extremely refined. But they were no different than the most refined, trained animal that can be. They never changed themselves and were in total control. So they were more refined than an animal. It was a matter of degree. It's possible that this very refined type of human being could come from an animal because they're the same type. They both can be trained. But there's no significant essential difference between them and an animal, because they haven't mastered and been in total control, which an animal can't do. Had he seen my Rebbe, Rishos Salanter, what a human being is capable of, then he would have realized it's not a matter of degree. These are more refined. That there's it's a different species. It's a different kind. And one kind can't come from another kind. One degree can come from another degree. That's evolution. But kind can't come one kind from a different kind. He would have never made the theory had he realized that human beings are not just refined animals. And that's the way that the secular world looks at it. We're just refined animals. We're a social animal, right? We basically, whatever applies to the animal world applies to us, which is not true, right? I once saw a study, really heard it on the radio, in Miami many years ago. They made a study amongst horses that there's a certain percentage of horses that are homosexual. Conclusion, therefore, by human beings, there is a certain segment of the human population that by nature is homosexual. It's part of nature. Okay? I might have had to pull my car over. It was so absurd. Because... Okay, but yeah? I could have saved them a lot of money. That's a good study. You know that there is a certain segment of animals that eat each other? They're cannibals. So therefore, it would follow that there is a certain segment among human people who are supposed to be cannibals. It's just an alternative lifestyle. Some people eat meat, some people eat people. Right? It's just an alternative life. You know there are animals that steal? So there's people who don't steal, and then there are people who do steal. It's an alternative lifestyle. Some people are thieves, some people aren't thieves. And you can take it ad, you know, the absurd. What's the difference? Yeah, for sure. It could be that naturally speaking, there are people who have a drive towards the same sex. But that doesn't mean it's okay to do. I'll tell you something else. Maybe a chiddush to you. You know, there are people who have drives towards the opposite sex? And in a way that may not be permissible, right? To somebody else's wife, somebody else's husband. To prohibited relations. So that's also natural. People are born with that. It's not abnormal. It's natural. People are supposed to control it and use it properly, or hold it back and suppress it. That's a human being. Animals aren't supposed to suppress their drives. They're animals. Behema is bo'ama, whatever it is, says the Maral. Ashor ben yomo kori shor. The shore is born ashore, dies ashore, never changes. Adam in gematria is ma. You always have to ask what he is, where he is, because he's always changing. He's capable of changing. He's not locked into his drives. So, of course, human beings have drives. And maybe even naturally temptations that are not natural, not what we would call normal. They're supposed to suppress them. They're supposed to hold them back. Right, just as much as people are born with drives to steal and sexual drives, they're supposed to control them and channel them the right way. That's all, or suppress them. So don't make a study and tell me that animals act like this when male people can act like that. No, all it tells me is that animals and people have similar drives, and people are people, and animals are animals. So. That's what Simcha Zissel meant. And that's what the Rabbeinu Yonah says. Different meaning than we interpreted before. Not lo yishkon ha-Torah la'olam, the misha ein bo midos tovos. The Torah can never reside by someone who doesn't have midos tovos. That's not what he said. He said, lo yishkon ha-Torah la'olam. The Torah can't always reside. It won't last forever if you don't have midos tovos. How long will it last? Till the first mouse goes by. Because basically, you've trained yourself to act in a certain way, but you have not in total control. So it'll work till the first mouse goes by, and then you lose control. So the Torah can reside by somebody who doesn't have midos tovos temporarily, but not la'olam, not forever. Because there's going to come a time when the mouse is going to go by, unless you're in total control. That was the difference between Avram's kind of midos and Noah's kind of midos. That's why there's a svarno that says in the end of Bereshis that Noach motzah chein be'enei Hashem. Noah got something free that he didn't deserve. What was that? His family was saved in his merit. Says the Sfarno, why didn't Noah deserve that his family should be saved? He was such a big tzaddik. He says, only tzaddikim that perfect other people deserve to have other people saved in their merit. But tzaddikim only perfect themselves, don't have that merit. You would seem from there that the Sfarno held that Noah was a person who didn't care about other people. He didn't try to perfect them, right? And therefore his merit only was for himself, not for others. But the Sfarno goes on and says that's not true. Even though Noah did try to perfect his generation, he spent 120 years building a teva so he could have a connection with them and give them mussar. And they came to him and they said, Noah, you know, building this big boat, there's no water around. What's going on? So Noah told them, well, there's no water there now, but there's going to be a lot of water around here if you guys don't do tshuva. And once he had a contact with them, he had a way of, if he walked around with a sign, the world's coming to an end, people would think he's nuts. Nobody would listen to him. Nobody would talk to him. But he got their interest up by building this boat for 120 years, so he had a point of confrontation with them. So he did try. Says the Sfarno, it's not that Noah didn't try. It's that what he did wasn't successful. Why wasn't it successful? Because Noah rebuked the people about their social conduct and the fact that they were doing things that were perverse and wrong. But he never taught them to know God and walk in his ways. Had he done that, he would have been successful, as opposed to Avram, who taught people to know God and walk in his ways. The way we explained it, it means the following. Noah taught them the first kind of character, what's socially accepted. Act right, because otherwise you affect other people. That's Inyan Hamedinos. That's the social structure of the world, which Noah perfected his character to be a socially acceptable person. And Mela, what you're doing is perverse, distorted, it's not right. But he never taught them to work on their characters where they were in total control and emulated God's character, not just to be socially acceptable, but to be a human being. So they basically remained, the difference is like this, what Noah did, he rebuked them on what they were doing wrong, it's not socially acceptable, you're harming society, so he may have been successful temporarily. He trained them not to do bad things, but he didn't change their character. And the Mela, when the first mouse went by, they went back down on all fours. You know what it's like? Somebody goes to the doctor, they have some kind of infection. Okay, and they're coughing because of that, and they're sneezing, and they have a fever. So Dr. A says, let's see what we can do. We'll give you some Akamol to take your fever down, we'll give you a decongestant to stop you from sneezing, and we'll give you some cough medicine, cough suppressant, to take away the cough. No, in a very short time, you look fine. You don't have any fever, you're not coughing, you're not sneezing. But he didn't cure you. The disease is still there. So what's going to happen? In 2-3 hours, the effects of the medicine will wear off and the symptoms will come back. All he treated was the symptoms. He didn't treat the disease. Second doctor says, you have an infection. We'll give you antibiotics. It's going to be a 10-day regimen. After that, you'll be fine. It takes 10 days. After 10 days, the symptoms don't come back because he cured the disease. Avram Avinu taught people how to change themselves and be in control of their characters. So he treated the disease. And Amela, it never went back to what they were doing. Noah treated the symptoms. You're stealing, you're this, you're that. It's not socially acceptable. Be a trained cat. But it doesn't work until if the mouse goes by, because you're intrinsically the same as the cat. It's just a matter of what's it called, of time, till it's going to come out. Right? There's a vort for it there. Something that what's his name? I can't remember his name. I was just going to tell you the name of that director. What's it called? Todd. That was his name. Mike Todd. That was the director I was talking about. Michael Todd. Now let's get to this guy, George Bernard Shaw. George Bernard Shaw said the following. I don't know if I should say it in a sheer, but it really brings out the point, so I'm going to say it. So you'll forgive me if it's not proper, but it's a really great word. He was known to be a very unconventional person who love to raise the irk of refined men and women, you know, in the English society. So he once was at a party, and there was this very distinguished lady, you know, English lady. So he went over to her and he said, would you have an affair with me? She looked, you know, like chutzpah to even, he said, if I gave you $1 million, would you have an affair with me? So she started thinking. She said, okay, now that we've established your morals, let's establish a price. In other words, if you could do it for some price, that means that there's a mouse that will bring you down on all four. So you're basically the same kind of a person that's capable of doing this. So then it's only a matter of time, place, and circumstance. But you're not a different person. That's the kind of morals that Noach taught. It cured symptoms, but only temporarily. Whereas Avraham Avinu was different. Now, since the Torah can't reside forever, only temporarily, by somebody who has no midos tovos, the Torah could not be given to a nation that didn't have the potential to have midos tovos. So therefore, why was Avraham chosen to be the progenitor of that nation? Because God knew he would teach his children midos tovos. Because without that, there's no chance to get the Torah. In fact, I once wanted to say, that's why the nations were rejected. God asked them, do you want the Torah? They said, what's in it? So God told Esau, it says you can't murder. They said, we have a problem with that because we're supposed to live by the sword. So how can we have a Torah that says you can't murder? God left them, went to Yishmael. They said, what's in the Torah? He said, can't steal. Can't steal. We have a bracha, yodo bakovi yadkobo. Our hands in everybody's pocket, their hands in our pocket. How can we have a Torah that says you can't steal? He left them. It always bothered me. Why did he leave them? They didn't say no. They said, we have a problem. Why didn't he explain to them that there's no problem? When it says that you live by the sword, it doesn't mean you have a license to murder. It means that you'll be mercenaries. And you will fight other people's battles in wartime. And then you're allowed to kill. It's war. So you'll live by the sword. You'll live by being soldiers of fortune. So there's no problem with murder and being soldiers of fortune. Do you want the Torah or not? Same thing with Yishmael. Yodo Bakovi Yakobo doesn't mean they have a license to pickpocket and to steal. You know what it means? The Targum says. It's frightening. The Targum says, Yodo Bakovi Yakobo, the Arabs will need the entire world, and the entire world will need them. So up until recently, the first part made sense. Arabs were nomads, right? They didn't have their own structure they needed the whole world for everything. They didn't produce anything. So they needed the whole world for all their basic needs. But the second part, the whole world needs them, didn't make any sense. Now we know the whole world needs them for oil. So there's a time when the whole world will need them too. So God should have said to them, that's what it means. It's not a license to steal. It means something different. Now, do you want the Torah or not? Why did he abruptly leave them? So one answer, I think, is a nation that thinks that they have a license to murder or a license to steal show that they don't have the basic character traits that a human being is supposed to have. So there's nothing to talk about. You can't receive the Torah. The Torah will never reside or not reside forever in people who don't have good midos, and you don't have any good midos if you think you can murder, if you think you can steal. So there's nothing to talk about. It's only the Jewish people who have at least a potential to develop midos tovos that can get the Torah. And Avraham Avinu was chosen because God knew he would teach his children how to have midos tovos. That's the idea. And therefore, in chinuch, you want to educate children, right, and make sure they stay on the derech, and that the Torah remains with them forever, and not just till the first mice go by, because there's so many mice out there, right? Most people even have the mice in their pocket. Right, with all the tumah that a person would have to go travel for or whatever, or do things that he'd be embarrassed. Today, you just put it on a screen in your pocket and you have the whole tumah of all the world there, and nobody sees, and there's no embarrassment, and there's no bother, and it doesn't even cost that much. And to tell you the truth, I don't know if I was growing up today, if I would be able to overcome the temptations that children have to overcome today, right? But it's a little mice, so those are terrible mice, So unless you teach someone good character, good behavior, in essence, you only treat the symptoms, but you don't work on their, they don't work on their characters and are in control, then what do you expect? So no chinuch is going to be accepted. They're not going to be successful, because it'll last up until the first mouse goes by, and then you can't expect the person to be anything different than an animal that gives into temptation. So if you want chinuch to be successful, you got to teach derech eretz and mitos tovos, which unfortunately many times is at best minimally dealt with. At best. People are makariv people, right? The Yiddishkeit. So they you know, they let them know that they have to wear the tzitzis out and wear a black hat and all the important things of, you know, what Torah is all about. And you have to eat kosher and you have to keep Shabbos. But do they tell them about that you have to have good character traits? I'm afraid, unfortunately, sometimes the people who are being makariv them don't know what it means to have good character traits. So how can they impart it to somebody else? But if you don't do that, all of those things are temporary until the first mouse goes by. So chinuch, kiruv, anything, if you don't include in it as an integral part character building, the people should know that it's also part of Judaism. In fact, it's probably the foundation. Reb Chaim Vital says that midos are not mitzvahs. They're not specific commands. They are the foundation of all mitzvahs. You can't have any mitzvahs unless you have midos tovos, unless you have derech eretz. That's why derech eretz, kodma l'torah. And it ain't derech eretz, ain't Torah. But somehow that is taken for granted. Well, derech eretz for sure, people will get on their own, when it doesn't work like that. And we teach so much Torah and so many things, and it's all there on a shaky foundation, because it's all waiting just for the first mouse to come by, because people haven't been told how to work on their characters. So it's something that, again, I don't know if I do it either, but at least you have to speak about it and realize that something's missing. Because if you understand something's missing, then maybe something will be done. Maybe it'll change. But if you don't even realize something's missing, this is the way it should be, then it'll never change. So I think that that's a very important lesson from the Sefer.